There aren't many guys on this roster you can just clear the side and get on the clock late. Obviously, Durant is one. Joe Johnson would play off the bench, obviously, and fortify your second unit. But he's not just an isolation player. I think coming to the Warriors, he would be forced to move the ball. And obviously, they do that with Quinn Snyder in Utah. They move the ball well. He's a good three-point shooter. His defense is okay. Would he be in the finishing five? That would depend night to night. But he would be a veteran guy that could score the ball, both shooting it as a drift three-point shooter and an isolation player that I think would make that second unit a little easier. Because right now, Clay, and to a lesser extent, David West has so much pressure on him to score in that second unit. Young can give it to you. Omri's got to get Omri Caspi going a little bit more. So, yes, I mean, Joe Johnson is a name we looked at weeks ago when we thought he was going to get bought out in Utah. But the Warriors are going to be in competition for a guy like Joe Johnson. I heard Cleveland's after him. I've heard Boston's after
Houston.
Him. I heard Houston's after him. So Bob Myers has got to get Joe.
Myers. We'll bring in Bob Myers in just a second here. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM in HD1 San Francisco. Bob Myers brought to you by Gelati Construction, celebrating 100 years of teamwork, solutions, and excellence. Bob Myers joining the Afternoon Delight right here on 95.7 The Game.
Broadcasting live from San Francisco, it's the Greg Papa Show on the Bay Area Sports Station, 95.7 The Game.
Joining us right now on a Thursday, because he stiffed us yesterday at this time, the Golden State Warriors general manager, Bob Myers. Apparently, he had so much to do yesterday. You saw all the transactions that Golden State has made in the last 24 hours. Hey, Bob, thanks for pushing us back, and you're welcome for allowing us to let you get all the work done that you needed.
That was really impolite way to... That's the worst welcome I think I've ever had. That's unbelievable.
Bob, I promise you, Steinmetz is somewhere locked away in his car, so we didn't bring Steinmetz back for this year's NBA trading deadline. So welcome back to the Afternoon Delight. Papa is here. Papa's back.
That was my vote to play the most impolite welcome to the two-time NBA Executive of the Year in the history of in radio, Bob. What the hell was that? That was not my vote. Trust me.
What? I am one. I'm thrilled that you're back, Pop. I missed you, man. I'm happy you're back. So I want to acknowledge that. And Vontae was okay, but it's not the same, man. We needed your juice. I needed the medical questions. I'm glad you're back.
And you're just glad that Steiny's not here. They had sound last week. So.
Yeah,
all right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Our time is precious. So let's get right to it here. Just give me the lay of the land, first of all. Who's in the room? I assume Joe Lacob is there. Steve Kerr's got to coach a basketball game. There are a flurry of trades today in the 10 o'clock hour. As you're, you know, gauging what you're going to do with your roster, how are you situated on NBA trade deadline day, Bob?
Well, that's interesting. Every team does it differently, and I think your situation predicates how you approach the deadline. Fortunately for us, over the last few years, we haven't been in a position where we felt that we have to do something. And that's not a place you really want to be in. And we've been lucky to avoid it. But it doesn't mean that we don't prepare for it. But I think what a little bit of a misnomer is, and I know you see these deals, and the fans and the listeners see these deals happen on the day of the deadline. Most of them, I would say 95% of deals that actually occur on the deadline have been in discussion for a week or 10 days. I don't know that. It's rare for a deal to get consummated from beginning to end on the day of the deadline. It does happen, but it's very, very unusual. So I will say and caution everyone, the things that you saw concluded today have been in discussion for a while, but you pivot away. You pivot towards things, you pivot away from them. So for us today, most conversations that I've had have been going on for the last week, the last 10 days. Steve's involved, but it's very organic. It's not us in a war room huddling up just today to make all these decisions. They've been ongoing. You have a sense when you wake up the day of the deadline how likely it is that you're going to do something or not, because there's a lead into it. Sometimes you don't know exactly what it's going to look like. When we've moved off money in the past before and wanted to get out of the tax, we knew there was three or four suitors. We knew X team would take a second-round pick to take on money. This team wanted $3 million. So it's all these variables, but you end up choosing one, so you know what's on the table. But today, to be honest, you know, we've been fairly quiet. It's just more of a reflection of what we've been able to do as far as our record and things like that. But my favorite, and this isn't, I don't want this to appear defensive, but there is a great Wooden quote. It says, don't confuse activity for achievement. But I personally struggle against that because I feel like it's our job, it's my job, it's the job of the front office to do everything we can to improve the team. So sometimes it's very hard. It's almost harder to not do something sometimes than to do something because you feel like you should, because you can always be better, but it has to work. So that's the balance we try to strike.
Kobe Altman had a lot of movement today, a lot of activity. We'll see what he achieved. And I know it's hard for you to address another team's roster, but do you have a handle on exactly who the Cleveland Cavaliers are right now, Bob? After what did they make? Three different trades today, I think.
Well, you know I can't say anything about any other team. I mean, and here's why, guys. We get in trouble, so we can't. I can't answer it. But there's another reason why we should stick to our team. And I know you got to ask. I have no problem with that. But if I talk about somebody else's team, I don't want them talking about ours. Any fan, any listener, you guys can. But for somebody in the GM profession, we have to respect whether people do and leave that alone publicly. And I think it's good. So when I see you at some point, I can say something. I don't even know what I, you know.
Text me. Text me, Bob, and tell me what you're thinking here.
Next question.
I wish that Daryl Morey of the Rockets felt that way about the Warriors. He talks more about our team than he does his own team, but that's another aside. Did you come close to making a trade today, Bob, or no?
I'd say not really. The things we did were on the things we discussed were marginal. No, I would not say close. I would say nothing was close for a variety of reasons. You have to have partners. I mean, on an overall level, guys, I can discuss. I thought there actually would be a little bit more activity. I can't be specific about what I thought, but overall, I think the league is valuing their picks at the highest level. First pick, round picks, second round picks. I don't know that I've ever seen a landscape that is so protective of those, which is symbolic of what they mean, which is a player, a young player, which is what everybody wants, young players on rookie scale contracts. Those are the most attractive assets inside an organization are players that have shown promise and you have under your control for a couple more years at a good low number. But that's universal across the league. So everybody wants the same thing, and picks provide the hope of that. And we all look at our track record and understand that drafting is really imperfect, but we all want to hang on to, which I think if you get it right, you grab a Draymond Green or you grab a certain guy, it pays off hugely, exponentially. So we all, as a collective group, are holding out the hope that with our pick, first round, second round pick, we're going to grab a young player on a good contract. So I think that stifles movement. And even this year, more than any other, it used to be commonplace that you'd see a player on an expiring contract get moved for a first round pick. That used to happen quite a bit. And it did not happen at all this deadline. So the winds have shifted a little bit.
Papa, you know, Bob, a couple hours ago, my sources are telling me that you're getting ready to play in the pickup game with a group of assistants right around the deadline. So I don't know really how active you were, Bob. It seems like you had your earbuds in.
Was that a Monty Poole rumor?
I'm not snitching. I'm just like you. Okay. I have my sources, Bob. I can't divulge it to that.
Let me set the record straight. After the trade deadline passes, we are not able to make any trade. So the trade deadline was passed, and a couple of our assistant coaches came up with a thought of letting some steam off. You know, so I acquiesced, and we played some very bad half-court 3-on-3 basketball, or I think that's what it was. And the beauty is nobody got hurt and nobody got traded. We tried to make some deals to improve our 3-on-3 team, but we weren't able to either. So no trades got done today at all.
Yeah. Explain to me and the audience exactly now what the next step is. Because in the NBA, when the trading deadline came and went, that was it. And now we have this whole new post-trading deadline season called the buyout season. And this year, I think, is going to be more interesting for a couple of reasons. The trading deadline got moved up 2 weeks now. It usually was after the All-Star break. Now it's before the All-Star break. So between now and March the 1st, as far as I understand, a player must be waived by this time. And then the new team can come in and buy him out. And he's got to work out a deal for the buyout with the old team. So just tell me how the buyout process works, Bob. And do you feel like you'll be active in the buyout process?
We've done it before. I think we did it in the past. We've done it with some guys. So we always active depends on what the options are. I have no sense of, I've seen names, but I don't know what's realistic as far as who will get bought out. Oftentimes there's speculation players, because I represent, you know, kind of knowing from the other side, sometimes players don't want to get bought out. They like where they are. They're happy. They don't want to go somewhere. That happens too. There's speculation. So first you have to see who is bought out, and we will do that. For us, it's a challenge in that we have 15, so we have to make a determination and be very careful and prudent about who we would go after, because we have 15 on the roster, so that would mean clearing a spot. So you have to make that determination. But I will say we will do our job, and if something makes sense, and if it's got buy-in from the coaching staff, we feel it can help us, then we would look at it. But without knowing who's going to get bought out, and I know I've heard you guys mention names. Like I said, you have to see who. Sometimes guys say, I want to get bought out, and they can't work out. The team that owns them or has their rights doesn't want to buy them out at the price that they want to be bought out. Some guys want to give back money to get out. Some guys don't. And so you have to first let that dust settle. But you're right about the March 1st date. For a player to be on the playoff roster, for our playoff roster, he has to be bought out by March 1st. The difference in this year is that since the trade deadline got moved up a week, this could actually go on. This buyout period could be a three-week period, which is kind of unusual. You know, the trade deadline has been much later, been mid-February, mid to late, you know, 14, 15, 16, 17 dates. So you don't have as much time following the trade. But this time it'll be a lot more time, a lot more speculation. But yeah, we've done it before, and we'll certainly look at it again and see if it makes sense. If it does, we'll do what we can. Whoever we would target would have to want to come. So it's part of the league, and you're going to, whether we're going to see a lot of guys do it, I know there's speculation that a lot will, but we'll see once all this stuff dust settles.
All right, lastly, and I don't think I've ever really asked you this about your basketball team when completely healthy, because, you know, last year you got into a rut, but Kevin Durant was out, you know, the stretch where you lost right. 5 out of 7 and 3 in a row, and there's not any injury to hang this on right now. They're just in a bit of a funk. What is wrong with your basketball team right now, Bob?
I don't know. I mean, I think that they, you know, it's not as much about the winning and losing, although I think you lose, it highlights mistakes and it highlights what are we doing wrong. But I could argue that there was some games that we won where we could perform better. I wish I could tell you exactly what I think. I think there's probably 10 different variables that play into it. There's potentially fatigue. There's motivation. There's getting to the break. I mean, you've heard all the things that people speculate. I don't really know. Sometimes you have to get punched in the mouth in order to get upset and respond. But I don't know. I'm not in the minds of the guys. I do know this. As a group, they're very competitive. They have a lot of pride. They've always responded. Even when we lost in the finals 2 years ago, I did not think it was because of effort and desire. But the reasons we lost, we got beat, but it was a pretty valiant effort. And when put to the task, this team has shown a grit, a mettle, when it matters. I'd love to see that 82 games. I'm sure everybody would. So would our players. But they have to be the ones that go out there and perform in a job that requires mental focus, physical effort, and sometimes it's difficult. And I think they know that. And as to why exactly, I don't quite know. But I do know that what we've seen and what you guys saw, I would go back the last couple weeks. It's not reflective of who we are. And I try to be fair as to what we've seen, but I don't think anybody inside our organization, you guys, that's not what we witnessed doesn't embody what we are. And I don't say that in a defensive way or to provide excuses. I just genuinely believe that what we've seen lately isn't a true reflection. The challenge is to get it back. And to get it back as soon as we can. And Steve's great. Like I said, I believe in the players, I believe in their character. And so I think we will get it back. But that's the process. That's the place we're in. And we need, you know, like you mentioned last year, losing 5 out of 7. We had an injury. City is going to come. How it comes, does it come through injury? Does it come through fatigue? However, you guys have been around professional sports fun. You just know that it's coming. I looked at the Dodgers last year. Remember when they lost? It seemed like they couldn't win a game. In the NL, they literally, and you sit there going, what's going on? The Diamondbacks are beating them. And then all of a sudden, they won a close game. And Steve used that Philly game at home last year as an example where we had to get out of it. We had to get out of the rut, and it was going to be hard. And usually when you're in a little bit of a rut, getting out of it is a grinder game. It's when you have to really push and make something happen. But it makes you better. It makes you appreciate the effort and the journey of all of it. Hopefully, how this, we'll see.
Yeah, I remember that Philly game. Right, that was the game Draymond picked up T.J. McConnell full court. Remember Bunting turned him, and he blocked his shot at the rim, and Draymond won that game by himself.
So. Bob, I remember receiving a text from Pop that during that game. He goes, am I the only one freaking out here? What's going on?
I remember texting him, they may not get out of this funk for a while. And then Draymond just was a fire-breathing dragon, and you wound up winning the game. I thought, okay, they're good now.
And we won those. I don't know if this will happen this time, but we won 15 in a row or something after that. But,
right.
You gotta go out and do it. But like I said, our guys are, I think they know what they need to do.
All right, Bob. Next week, we'll get back to the medical hour here on 95.7 The Game.
Everybody's playing. Durant Sands, fine. And I shot you a text on the Cavalier roster, so tell me what you're thinking that off to you.
Okay.
I don't even know who these guys are. Clarkson, Nance Jr., Hood, Hill. They've changed their whole team, so we'll see.
We'll see.
All right.
Take care, Bobby.
I'll see you guys later. Thanks, man.
Yeah, all right, Bob. Bob Myers, GM and President of Basketball Operations of the Golden State Warriors here. 95.7 The Game presents the Bay Area Sports Hall of Fame All-Star Flyaway. Experience NBA All-Star Weekend in L.A. Round trip, airfare, hotel stay, tickets to the All-Star Game. Plus, you and three guests will get to golf at the Olympic Club Lake Course, followed by dinner with the Warriors legend Rick Barry. Dinner with Rick Barry. Interesting here. Bidding starts Tuesday, February 13th at 7 a.m. and all proceeds go to the Bay Area Sports Hall of Fame, helping at-risk kids. For more information, visit 957thegame.com, and Pop will discuss how we grade John Lynch's first year on the job from the draft day trade to Jimmy G's new deal on the afternoon delight. It's Pop and Bonte, 957 The Game.
Now back to the Greg Papa Show on 95.7 The Game.
I'm also very fortunate and thankful to Jed York and to everybody else with the 49ers that found it fit and had enough confidence in me to ask me to take on this role. So I'm very humbled and, as I said, excited. I can't wait to get going.
Welcome back to the Afternoon Delight, Pop and Bonte, 95.7 The Game. That was 49ers GM John Lynch when he was introduced as a new general manager of the 49ers over a year ago. And I remember to this day, Pop, when that move happened, I text you and Derek. And I said, John Lynch, really? Because there was no leakage. There was no sources about John Lynch. And then you text back and said, this move will work. So let's evaluate John Lynch's first year. We were doing a draft show where John Lynch makes the shrewd move with the Chicago Bears, moves back a spot to the number three spot, selects Solomon Thomas, picks up the Bears' second round pick, which he flipped for Jimmy Garoppolo here. So year one of John Lynch era, I will give him an A. What would you give him? What would you grade John Lynch at right now, Pop?
Well, he's done well, you know, and the reason I had confidence in him, and I likened him to Steve Kerr, it was more the quality of the person. And I don't know John Lynch nearly as well as I knew Steve Kerr when Steve was hired, but just a few times that I had been around him, you could just tell there's some guys in professional sports, both coaches and people that run teams, that you really can't trust what they're saying. And, you know, and I keep bringing up Daryl Morey. You know, he just has his style. Bob Myers has his style. Steve Kerr has his style. And John Lynch was going to be a guy who would never, ever basically say lie to a player. And I think that's so important, where players know when he tells them what is on his mind, they may not like the answer, but they're going to know it's true. And there's a genuine quality to him. And I think that permeates down to the entire organization. It's the same with the coaching staff, where, you know, you don't feel like the GM sticking the coach in the back with a knife, and just none of that that brings franchises down. And so I just thought the quality of the person, and the fact that he also studied TV, and whenever John Lynch, there were certain broadcasters that, you know, when I get ready for a Raider game or I'm trying to learn about a player. I watch the All-22 a lot, but I'll also, like a John Gruden game, I'd always listen to John. Maybe not watch the game, but I'd listen to what he had to say about players as I was getting ready. And the same with John Lynch. He would teach you something, and you would learn something about the game. There was a higher level of knowledge. And then he played quarterback for Bill Walsh. He learned to change positions and became a safety when Bill Walsh was there. And he learned, so he sees both sides of it. And just the quality of the person, the amount of work he put into his broadcasting, it's real. But then you don't know if he can really do the job. You just don't know. It's a hard job. And football's hard. You got a 90-man roster. You got a 53-man roster throughout the year. There's so many players out there. It's a hard job. I'm not going to grade him on the draft yet. I do want to watch the younger players. I mean, you all want to laud him on the Chicago deal trading back. But that was more Ryan Pace sitting in Chicago that wanted that quarterback from North Carolina, Trubisky. I think that was an easy trade for John to make, to trade back the one spot. That did not seem like a difficult deal. Why would you not do that? You want Thomas anyway. They're trading up to get the quarterback. Myles Garrett's going to go one. So that's an easy trade to make. I do want to evaluate Solomon Thomas more. I do understand him a little bit more on how you can move him around. I think he's an edge setter in the run game. You move him inside over a guard, kind of the way the Eagles use Brandon Graham and some of their outside people. They move him inside later, and they bring in the rush people. But you got to see more from him. Reuben Foster, I'm not quite ready to say. I forget who it was. I think it was Charlie Casserly evaluated all the rookies. Or maybe it was Gil Brandt. Gil Brandt said, you know, he's a 10-time Pro Bowler. I still have to see more from him. The reservations that I had about him initially are still there, where I think I know his role in the base. He's an inside thumper. I think eventually he'll be a middle linebacker and a sideline-to-sideline scraper. If he's got a clean look at a back or anybody with a ball in his hands, he will blow you up and tackle. You can see him. I still don't know about his change of direction and coverage. I think it's lacking. I think ultimately they will use him the way they used him this year. A light went off with him. He's Dante Hightower, and I hate to compare Alabama linebackers and this guy's the same as that guy, but I think they used him the way Belichick uses Hightower, which is off the ball, inside linebacker, run player in the base, and then an edge rusher in the nickel, and he's got power. He can get to the quarterback. I don't like him matching up in man on backs, but they don't play that way. So, you know, they play a drop, get to a hook zone, change direction, and that's fine for this system, but you change coaches, somebody else comes in, you fire defensive coordinators, they play a different way, then all of a sudden his skill set is different. So, but you know, I want to watch more of the young guys. I want to see Taylor.
Akello Witherspoon play well. You know what you have is C.J. Beathard. Joe Williams basically was redshirted. He was on IR this season. He'll be back. The young man from Utah, George Kittle, played really well.
I like him.
He was a fifth round pick. Adrian Colbert was a steal in his seventh round. Popped 229 overall. The safety can fly.
He's the most natural free safety on the team, I think. I honestly think he's the most natural free safety.
Absolutely. And then you bring in Earl Mitchell, a D tackle. He played solid. Marquise Goodwin looks like a bargain. Pierre Garçon. Well. So year one for John Lynch, not too bad here, Pop.
You have to wait. And then the key thing, obviously, is the trade.
Jimmy Garoppolo trade.
To get Jimmy Garoppolo and to be able to identify him, to go out and have the relationship. And Kyle, the head coach, had a relationship with Belichick. But John Lynch obviously had one. I don't know if he burned it by, you know, talking about the trade after. And he was, you know, to Tom Brady and all that. But he was able to get Garoppolo. And now, you know, to get the deal done. And Parag, I'm sure, was involved. So overall, I think it's been a tremendous first year for John Lynch. Now, you know, you got to see it and how he develops from here. How much, you know, does he spend in free agency now? What's his second draft going to look like? Does he make any trades here? I think it's going to be intriguing now that he has a decent nucleus of young players and the quarterback, what he does from here. But obviously, yeah, it's been a very good first year for John Lynch. There's no question about that.
Very good first year for Lynch. He has 5 more years on the deal alongside Kyle Shanahan and now Jimmy Garoppolo. Don't forget fullback Kyle Juszczyk made the Pro Bowl. So John Lynch so far in year number one, solid, solid, solid move. So where do the Niners go from here, Pop? They have their quarterback in tow. 2-year deal for Cassius Marsh, a defensive end from New England. Where do they go from here? Do they go with the interior? Do they try to beef up the offensive line? Norwell in Carolina is going to be a free agent. He's a nice young asset. set at guard. They still have Joshua Garnett. He'll be back as a guard. I don't know about him yet. Still have to evaluate him as well. Where do the 49ers go next now with this boatload of cash, with this plethora of draft picks? Where do they go now to build around Jimmy Garoppolo?
Well, I think the key decision they have to make, and they may have already made it, or it could be how much money is he looking for, is Carlos Hyde. I think I've gone back and forth on Carlos Hyde here. I did not think he would be able to adjust to being the quarterback under center, as opposed to all the shotgun runs. But bringing Garoppolo in does change that, because they put Garoppolo in the shotgun a lot to play to his comfort zone. And he became a better, as time went on, outside zone runner. I know Carlos Hyde can run inside power. I think he did prove to me that he can run with a quarterback under center and a lead blocking fullback. I think now, and he can run the inside zone, but if you're going to play for Kyle Shanahan, you've got to be adept at running the outside zone. And I thought he really struggled at it early in the year. He just didn't know when to cut it, when to keep it play side. He's a big back. He lost weight. He's gotten better in the passing game. I don't know, though, Bonte, really, what they think of him. I can think something of it. Doesn't matter what I think of it. Doesn't matter what the media thinks of it. It's what those two guys, mainly, and, you know, you defer to your quarterback, to your running back coach, but mainly it's the head coach, and it's John. And, and then what does he want to get paid? What is it going to cost? What are other free agent running backs that are out there? And I think the one thing that he's lacking in still, even though they can say he got better in the outside zone, we can work with him on that, we're going to run more gun runs with Garoppolo in, I don't think he's great as a pass catcher out of the backfield. I think he's gotten better, but I still think he's stiff in that regard. There are a lot of guys that are much better in the NFL. I think he has gotten better as a blocker. There was one early blitz pickup, where was it? Indianapolis, I think it was, where he was just bad. And I remember saying, as a coach, and you just check that you cannot trust him to do this. And, you know, Frank Gore was the opposite. He was so good at it. If you can't trust him to pick up a blitz and he's not great catching the ball, then what is he? He's a first down guy, maybe second down. But when we get to third down, I can't play him. Now, they may not think that, but I have concerns about that. So if that's the case, then what do you pay a guy that's coming off the field on third down that I can't trust a block? I think he got better. I'm saying he's better in both regards.
You still have Matt Breida there to back him up. He played really well. You don't know what you have at Joe Williams.
I'm more looking at free agents.
Free agents. Well, you can look at Deion Lewis here, Isaiah Crowell, 25 years old, from the Cleveland Browns.
Rex Burkhead is
28.
At.
And they need that third down back. What about Jerick McKinnon out of Minnesota?
He has very good speed. He's a tremendous third down
back. I do think the 49ers will let Carlos Hyde walk. We thought Carlos Hyde may be traded before the season, during the season. We both don't think Carlos Hyde will be around here much. But let's bring in Matt Millen, the former GM of the Detroit Lions and former Super Bowl champion with the Oakland Raiders and the San Francisco 49ers. Matt, how you doing today? How you feeling?
I'm doing okay. What's going on?
Good to talk to you, Matt. Just to jump in, you know, you're a guy who played against great quarterbacks. You signed him. You tried to acquire him. The big news here in the Bay Area, Matty, is the Niners signing Jimmy Garoppolo, and it's early in the offseason. The Super Bowl is just days old, and they gave him 5 years for $137.5 million and $74 million of those dollars guaranteed, at least in part. Give me your thoughts on the big, bold signing John Lynch and Parag Marate made today, Matt.
Well, I would say, first of all, good job by John and the Niner organization, because they sewed up their future. That's the first thing. The big question you would say is the body of work enough? I don't know how many games it is. Maybe I know it's less than 10. But you'd say, is that body of work good enough to be able to justify what you just did? And, you know, sometimes you got to roll the dice. But I think what you saw with Garoppolo as the season went on, this particular season, every week he got better. He learned the offense more. There was more of an understanding of how to work the offense, how to work the players within the offense. So I think all those things were positives. I think that's a good move by the Niners. And the numbers are just the numbers. You know, it's so if you're Ben Roethlisberger or if you're Matt Ryan or Drew Brees or Brady, what does Brady make? Brady don't make 20.
He doesn't make that. He's always been taking less. And he has the same agent as Jimmy. He has Don Yee.
Oh, yeah, Don. Yep. Yeah, so if you're any quarterback in this league, Carson Wentz, any of them, and you see those numbers, you got to jump up and down. The same thing with Carr, because all it's going to do is just continue to go north. You get, what, a 8% increase every year in the cap? You're going to make some cash. So good time to be a QB in the NFL.
Yeah, there's going to be. I want to get your thoughts on the QB market. But just real quickly, since you know the agent, and you know, when you sign a contract like this, it's not just the GM and the head coach. I mean, everybody in the organization gets involved. Ownership.
Oh, yeah.
And you're signing a quarterback and saying he's the guy and giving him these kind of dollars, Matt. How does it work with the owner, with the coaching staff, with the agent? How does this all get done, do you think?
Well, ultimately, you know, the agent pitches the number, and that wasn't – they got to that number. So it's not like – I guarantee you Don asked for more. And so whether it was more in guarantee, whether it was more in total monies, whether it was more in, you know, whatever the combination was. And then inevitably what ended up happening is you have to go to ownership because ownership – that's an ownership decision. It's not like John just said, hey, yeah, that's a good deal. We'll take it. John may have been doing all the negotiating, and I got tired of it after a while because it was just a bunch of BS. And you can get those things done fast, but they just, you know, they just play the game. I hated that. So you get to the bottom line and you say, okay, here's the number. We can get this deal done right here. And then it's not your choice. Then you go. You go in and you say, hey, is this the number? What do you think? And they look at it, they scratch their head, and they realize that they're making a lot more money than that. and they go, yeah, sure, why not? And then it gets done. And so it was the right thing to do. I mean, the number was going to be big regardless. You knew that. So now he just has to continue to do what he's doing and continue to grow. The one thing that I would see with Garoppolo, just that I watched his tape, and I only saw three of his games, but in those games, you could see each week he got a little more comfortable with the offense. So, which tells me, so he wasn't digesting the whole thing, and he was only there for a short time. My guess is he digests it more this offseason. And you get an even better and more thorough Garoppolo than what you had at the end of the season.
Matt Millen joining us on the Afternoon Delight, Pop and Bonte, 95.7 The Game. Now, we just had Joel Corey on the show earlier, Matt, salary cap expert, former sports agent, and he mentioned that the 49ers may try to front-load this deal with Garoppolo to where it may count as much as $50 million towards a cap this season and give him some leniency in the future here, give him more money to play with in the future. What's the benefit to that? What's the pros and cons to maybe front-loading this contract for Jimmy Garoppolo?
Well, you just have to see how your dollars are and where they're at. And so if you're a younger team, you have stuff coming up and you want to try to get all you're trying to do is take up your space and then play with it. And so if you have a team right now and a roster right now that you don't really have that many guys that are going to get paid, then front load it. It'll still work and you're going to give yourself some room on the back end. And you know, the rules have changed a lot. I'm out of there 10 years already. So the cap rules and money rules change, and so you have to stay on top of it, and I haven't stayed on top of any of that stuff. But there are benefits to you know, sometimes holding it back and sometimes front-loading it. We did both.
Matty, give me your thoughts. You know, this is obviously the first big quarterback signing of the offseason, but there's going to be more. Drew Brees has a deal to do with Mickey Loomis and Tom Benson and Sean Payton. Kirk Cousins is out there. Alex Smith just got traded. There's rumors that Bruce Allen and Daniel Snyder may franchise tag Kirk Cousins. I can't believe that. And then trade him. As you look at the quarterback free agent market, what are you going to be looking at this offseason, Matty?
First thing I'd say, it's a good time to be a quarterback in the National Football League. So, because they're going to get paid. And they're going to get paid commensurate to what, you know, a good starting pitcher gets or a home run hitter gets or a great scorer gets in the NBA. Those numbers are already up there. Football still lags behind. So I would say, you know, that's the first thing. It's a good time to be a quarterback. The second thing I would say... is regardless of what the number is, you still got to play. You still have to play, and you still have to, you know. So Tom Brady, at whatever his number is, I don't, what is it, like 12 million or 13, something like that, I don't think it's a big number. So
no. Yeah, he's always taking less. Yeah.
So all those things are going to go up. Like, so you talk about a guy like Roethlisberger who says he wants to contemplating retiring stuff. That's a bunch of baloney. He's looking for another contract. I mean, at these numbers, he'll play till he's 50.
As you say, it's a good time to be a quarterback. And then you got the Philadelphia Eagles who have Nick Foles as a backup,
right,
winning the Super Bowl, and they got Carson Wentz. So let me ask you this, because, you know, we often visit with you, and you're usually in the workshop making something out there. You are in the state of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
So give me your thoughts on the Eagles. And then I have never asked you this, but what was it like when you won your first Super Bowl with the Raiders as just a kid, and you had to beat the Philadelphia Eagles to do it, Matty, being a state of the Pennsylvania guy and a Penn State guy?
Oh, it was awesome. I loved it. I absolutely loved it, Pop. And here's why. Growing up, the only Eagle I really could relate to is Chuck Bednarik.
I loved him.
And so, and I was never a team fan. Like, I never followed teams. I followed players. And so the Eagles are back here, and all these Eagle fans are back here. It used to drive me nuts, just like Giants fans drive me nuts. And so when we had a chance to play the Philadelphia Eagles, I got to know Chuck very well. And, I remember I saw Chuck before the game, and we just started talking about the 60 championship. And then through the years, we would talk about stuff. And Chuck was very aware of how much coin each guy made. I think he was stuck on, like, you know, he'd tell you to the penny what his paycheck was every week, his last season, the most he ever made. And it was something ridiculous, like, you know, $1,100 or something. And so when he starts seeing these monies now and then, and they were talking 30 years ago, and they were nothing. Now, oh, my goodness. He'd have a fit. But, I enjoyed it. And, we were fortunate. We had a great team. And it was a team. What the Philadelphia Eagles are going to find, and because I think they're a great position. They're young. They got a young quarterback. They have key guys under contract, and you know the monies are good. I mean, they did a nice job with their cap, but they're going to find it's a lot easier to be in the hunt than to be hunted. That's the first thing, and the second thing is, you know, are you willing to get the same work ethic and the same work attitude that you had this year next year? It's not easy.
Well, Matt,
human nature takes over, always has.
Matt, I got to ask you here. Back in 1980, our crack staff back here is researching this. Did you or did you not attend the 1980 Super Bowl parade?
No.
Why not?
Who the heck wants to go to a parade?
Did you never go to a Super Bowl parade?
Did Al even have one in 80? I don't know.
Yeah, they did have one, and I'll tell you, this is the weirdest thing. So I'm not a big fan of lots of people. Like, when there's a lot of people around, I leave. I mean, I can't take it. And so they were like, hey, we're going to have a parade, and I'm like, I'm flying home. So I got on a plane, and I flew to Hockendockel, Pennsylvania. And I was sitting
where? Hockendockel?
What the hell is that?
Did you Hockendaz and Hockendockel?
Right, 4 North 3rd Street, Hockendockel, PA.
Hockendockel.
Sitting in my mom's living room, and I turned the TV on, and there's Tooze and Ted Hendricks and Lester Hayes and Jim Plunkett. And I sat there, and I looked at my mom, and I was like, Did I really play in that game? It was the weirdest thing. It was like, there they were in a big parade, and I was sitting in Hockendockel about to have spaghetti and meatballs.
So at that moment, did you think, man, I wish I went to the parade?
Yeah,
are you cool there?
Myself, I'm glad I'm not out there.
Well, that was when Al was threatening to move the team. I didn't know if they were going to have a parade.
Yep.
Huh?
It was right at the start of it. And then, of course, 81, he made the declaration. In 82, we played down in L.A. and practiced up in Oakland, and then 83 we moved.
Wow, so you didn't go to not one Super Bowl parade. When you went with the 49ers, you didn't go either down Market Street?
No, I did go to the 49ers. That was the 49er one was the one I went to because we flew home, and they made us go, and I was like, well, I'm getting my car. And they're like, you can't. We're going from here right onto that bus right there. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I got on one of those little buses that looked like a trolley car, and I sat behind the driver, and I didn't move.
You really don't like parades. These are Super Bowl winning parades. How about the one in Washington? Did you go to that one?
No, heck, I left. I went home.
Did you even watch the Eagle parade today, being in Pennsylvania?
Heck no, are you kidding me? 3.5 million people show up? You got to be kidding me. I had some friends of mine call me and say, are you going down to parade? I said, you are out of your mind. 3 million extra people in that city? Holy smoke.
It was free Bud Light, wasn't it? I think Lane Johnson got a bet there.
They can say all the dillies they want. It's not going
to
make a difference.
Oh, man, I missed you. You sound good. I hope you're in good health, my friend.
Yeah, I'm hanging in there. Got back from the Mayo last week. Some good news, some bad news. So, yeah, we'll take what we get.
You're a tough SOB. Hang in there. Hang in there, my friend. I'm praying for you.
Thanks, Matt.
All right, guys.
Matt Millen. Not a fan of the people at parades. Not a fan of parades.
He went to the Niner parade.
He went to the Niner one. ADD must have gave him some cash.
So many rings, he couldn't pick which parade to go to. Wouldn't you go to the parade, Vontae?
Hell yeah, I would. Why not?
Free Bud Light in Philly today.
ADD must have had something to do. Hey, Matty, you're going to this parade, buddy. Here's a briefcase full of cash.
No, get on that cable car.
Get on that cable car, Matt Millen. Oh, what a fun show. The show has flown by. But now it's time for the Caboose Pistol right here on 95.7 The Game.
And now it's time for the Caboose Pistol with Greg Popper in Bonte Hill on 95.7 The Game.
The Caboose Pistol.
The old Caboose Pistol.
A few stories that almost slip through the cracks.
I know someone who could hide a machine gun in there.
Yeah. I like big.
Right now on the Afternoon Delight on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, can somebody give Bob some credit?
Well, we know Draymond likes parades.
Yeah, we do.
He's always had a good time at the first one. Yep. And then the second one.
Cleveland win?
Nope. They suck? Yep.
Did he troll? He trolled LeBron James hard last year. Remember he had the quickie shirt?
He wore the quickie shirt last year. So we hope we have another parade. But the parade in Philadelphia was interesting, watching the feed on NFL Network until the Jimmy G news broke down and that all changed. But it was good to see some Philadelphia fans celebrating in Philadelphia for the Super Bowl parade. And Jason Kelce, the center for the Philadelphia Eagles, probably giving Draymond his money's worth for his speech at the parade. Let's take a listen.
Doug Peterson. When Doug Peterson was hired, he was rated as the worst coaching hire by a lot of freaking analysts out there in the media. This past offseason, some clown named Mike Lombardi told him that he was the least qualified head coach in the NFL. You saw a driven Doug Peterson, a man who went for it on fourth and down. Went for it on fourth and down in the Super Bowl with the trick play. Everybody wanted it more. And that's why we're up here today, and that's why we're the first team in Eagles history to hold that freaking trophy. For 52 years, y'all have been waiting for this. You want to talk about underdog? You want to talk about a hungry dog? For 52 years, you've been starved in this championship.
You know what's up.
Everybody wonders why we're so mean. Everybody wonders why the Philadelphia Eagles aren't the nicest fans. If I don't eat breakfast, I'm f***ing pissed off.
Jeez, he's lit.
No one wanted us. No one liked this team. And you know what? I've just heard one of the best chants this past day. And it's one of my favorite, and it's new. And I hope y'all learn it. Because I'm about to drop it right now. You know what I got to say? To all those people that doubted us, to all those people that counted us out, and to everybody who said that we couldn't get it done, f*** you.
I knew that's where he was going.
No one likes us. No one likes us. No one likes us. We don't care. We're the Eagles. F***ing Eagles. No one likes us. We don't care.
Wow.
Wow.
How many Philly specials did he have?
Is Michael Lombardi allowed back into the 215?
Poor Michael.
He got he got ripped. And I actually saw Michael Lombardi tweet and said, hey, Jels, what was this tweet said, Derek? Did you see his tweet?
I actually didn't see any of his tweets, but Michael's been catching the brunt of this. From ballers to his takes on Doug Peterson.
Man, he ripped Doug Peterson when they hired him.
He ripped Doug Peterson.
Lit in the streets of Philadelphia. By the way, they don't like playing this song in Philadelphia, I guess.
It's a great song.
It's a great song.
Here's what Michael Lombardi tweeted. Movie. Look, I deserve what Kelsey said. I was wrong, and he is right.
Very classy.
Very classy, Michael. Very classy.
Jesus.
Wow.
Kelsey was Draymond.
He sounded like a wrestler, right? That was WWE Pro Bowl
He's the one with the big beard, the big bushy beard.
Yes. He actually dressed up like Jasmine's dad from Aladdin today, too.
Yeah, what was that about?
Him and Chris Long were wearing some interesting attire today. Kelsey wore like a whole robe.
Yeah,
and a hat,
weird.
And he was looking good, too. But Chris Long wore, like, a Joel Embiid jersey and, like, a...
a full fur beak coat or something?
He looked like Frank Lucas from American Gangster coming out with, like, the chinchilla.
Oh, when he threw it in the fire?
Right, exactly.
Exactly.
threw it in the fire, the chinchilla.
You made me look bad.
You made me look bad. Fraser Ali.
that was bad. I want Chris Long as a Raider, by the way.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting.
We gotta make that happen.
Speaking of Raiders, we talk Raiders from time to time, right?
We do.
One story we didn't get to today, and I hope hopefully we have time tomorrow. John Gruden's patience with Marshawn Lynch is growing thin. There's reports out there that he has stiffed John Gruden, that he was supposed to have a meeting today with the coaches, and Marshawn Lynch did not show up.
Well, Doug Henderson, his agent, just tweeted out to all the couch potato non-verified media people speaking on Marshawn Lynch, get a real job at Check Sources. Hashtag beast mode.
Interesting. We may talk about that tomorrow. But there's one person I've been thinking about with this Philadelphia parade talk and the Philadelphia Eagles winning. You know, Howie Roseman redeemed himself and Doug Peterson showing that he's a great coach. But damn. If only John Middlecoff never got a radio job, he'd still have a ring. He'd still have a job with the Eagles.
why are you putting that together? Chip Kelly's the one that fired him.
That's true, that's true.
Chip Kelly fired him.
And I like Middlecoff, but I mean, that's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen.
Although Chip Kelly,
I just wanted to bring up Middlecoff
again on
the show.
Chip Kelly should get a ring. You think they'd use all those RPOs if Kelly wasn't there with Foles?
Yeah, you're right. They kept the offensive line coach back from the Chip Kelly era and a lot of those concepts.
Chip Kelly should get a ring.
All right, that's it for us, Derek. No more Caboose Pistol. That's
it. Well, we'll have an interesting story tomorrow about Quincy Jones, Richard Pryor, and Marlon Brando.
You're gonna like this, Pop. This is interesting. Quincy Jones letting it all rip right now. But that's it for us. We'll be back tomorrow at high noon. Up next is Damon Bruce. He'll be joined by Mike Silver at 3:30 right here on 95.7 The Game.